Over the last couple of shiurim, we've talked about the importance of having a correct conception of God, especially within the thought of Rambam. And today we're going to address a question which the Rishonim already ask on Rambam and is really a very problematic question. And that is, what about if a person comes to a false conception of God or faulty beliefs because of a misunderstanding of the Makoros? For example, someone who believes that God has a physical body because they understand the Psukim literally. How do we treat such a person? Do we consider them a heretic, an apikores, they have no chelak olam haba, and the like? Or would we say, like we say in other areas of halacha, onus rachmana patre, it's not their fault. They came to this false conclusion by learning the psukim, by learning chazal, and therefore we don't blame them for their misunderstanding. And this question, of course, is particularly relevant nowadays. How do we view people who have false beliefs? People who came to their false beliefs not because they're malicious, but simply because they were never taught otherwise, or the like. How did the Torah, how does the halacha treat such people? So that is today's topic, Be'ezras Hashem. And the first source is on page 25 of your source books, which is what the Rambam writes after listing the 13 principles of faith. Another time, perhaps, we'll come back to why Rambam picked these 13 principles and how he chose them, what his sources are. It is interesting, parenthetically, that if you look at the Nosei Kelim in Paragimel of Hilchos Tshuva, where the Rambam states the 13 principles as well, more or less, at least 12, the Nosei Kelim cite sources for the Rambam's Ikari Amuna, just like they would cite sources for any other halacha and Hilchos Nizkei Mamon and the like. This codification was not seen as a chiddush. It was seen as what the Rambam does in Mishneh Torah. In Mishneh Torah, the Rambam scours Shas and identifies all the halachos and then organizes them in a clear manner. And just like no one really did that before the Rambam, when it comes to other areas of halachos, Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, and certainly not Hilchos Tshuva, but nobody did this before the Rambam in terms of organizing the Ikari Emunah either. But again, another time we'll talk about these Ikari Emunah, where he got them from, why he chose these ones, and the like. But after citing the Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah, the Rambam tells us what are the what happens if a person does not have these. So this is what he writes after the Ikari Emunah, again, the bottom of page 25. The Rambam writes, V'kasher yihyu kayamim la'adam kol ha'yisodos halalu ve'emunasu bahem emitis hareyu nichnas b'chlal Yisrael. Someone who believes in these 13 principles of faith, so they are Jewish. V'chova la'havo v'lachmol alav v'chol ma sh'tziva Hashem osanu ze al ze min ha'ava v'achva. And therefore, if he believes in these principles, we love him and have compassion towards him and the like. And even if he does many averos, because despite believing in the Ikari Emunah, he's overcome by passion. So he will certainly be punished for his sins. However, he has a chelek in Olam Haba. He's Jewish. Every Jew, by dint of his being Jewish, has a chelek in Olam Haba. Miposhe Yisrael, however, since he sinned, so he's considered a sinner, but he's Jewish, he has a chelek in Olam Haba. V'kasher yifakfek adam b'yisod me'elu ha'yisodos, however, if someone is to doubt any of these 13 principles, note how he doesn't even say deny, but he says doubt. We'll return to that a little later. Hareze yatza min haklal, v'kafer b'ikr, v'nikra min v'apikores, v'kotitz b'netios, v'chova l'snoso u'l'hashmido, Ve'alav hu omer, halom yisanech Hashem esna v'chulei. So then, he is excluded from Klal Yisrael, he's a heretic, there's a mitzvah to hate him, and he has no chelek l'olam haba, And there's even a mitzvah to destroy him. Maybe a little later we'll talk about the nature of that mitzvah, though we should note that the Chazon Ish, as well as others, presume that that principle, the principle of Moridin Velo Malin for Minim, does not apply anymore. And again, maybe later we'll talk about why. What does Chelek L'Olam Haba mean? So I guess for that we have to define Olam Haba, which we're not going to do today. We'll, Bezras Hashem, spend time learning the sugya of Olam Haba. But for now, whatever Olam Haba is, such a person who does not believe in the Ikari Emuna does not have a Chelek in Olam Haba. Sounds like from Rambam elsewhere that that would mean that when he dies, he ceases to exist. In other words, his soul does not continue, as opposed to everyone else who does believe, whose soul continues in a spiritual sense. Olam Haba for the Rambam is a spiritual world. So someone who lacks Olam Haba is Nichras, which the Rambam understands, at least seems to understand, meaning that they cease to exist. When their body dies, their soul dies as well. The Rambam restates this idea in Hilchos Tshuva, as I mentioned, in the third parak. And it's in Hilchos Tshuva where the Ravid offers his famous critique. If you turn to page 26, the Ravid there writes, "Shiyesh sham ribon achad ela shehu guf uval tmuna." The Rambam says that there are five people that are considered minim. One of those is someone who believes that God has a physical body. Amar Avram, "V'lama kara lezeh min, v'kama gedolim v'tovim mimenu halchu b'zu ha-machshava, l'fi ma sh'ra'u b'mikros, v'yosir mima sh'ra'u b'divrei ha-gados ha-mishabshos es-adeos." Why is called such a person a min? There are people even greater than Rambam. Obviously, this is somewhat perhaps hyperbolic, but we'll talk about a little bit later on, if we have time, who the Ravid might be referring to. Were there any great chachamim in our tradition that did have a corporeal conception of God? The truth is, in my view, there really aren't any or many, certainly not people that we've normally heard of, though we'll talk about it a little later. There's a discussion whether Rashi was a corporealist and the like. Again, if we have time, we'll get to that later. But the Ravid says, look, there have been great tzaddikim and talmidei chachamim who believe in a corporeal understanding of God. Why? Because that was the impression they got from the psukim, and all the more so from agados hamishabshos es hadeos. There are various agados, like, for example, the Gemara and Brachos that talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's being meniach tefillin, that indicate, at least when understood simply or superficially, that God is a physical body. Someone who comes to a false belief based off of those sources is not a heretic. That is the Ravid's objection. And the question that we are going to address today is, what would the Rambam respond to Ravid's objection? A lot of what I'm going to say today has emerged from many of the conversations I've had on this topic with Rabbi Rafi Stoll, though. So he's been very helpful in helping me study this sugya, though I should admit that our conclusions are not identical. But I think he's the biggest expert I know on this topic, more than me. So he's a good person to consult if you'd like to study the matter further. You also got to visit Florida. Okay, so we are going to present four approaches to the Rambam and how the Rambam would respond to this critique. The first approach we're going to do is most famously known as Reb Chaim's approach. The Reb Chaim is said to have formulated the phrase Nebuch an Apikores is Ochet an Apikores, which means that Nebuch an Apikores that is a heretic, Nebuch, it's not his fault. It's not his fault. He was corrupted by agados hamishabshos esadeos. He learned in yeshiva. He tried to do what's right. He's a good yid. And yet, Nebuch, he came to heretical beliefs. But Nebuch an Apikores is achet an Apikores. He too is an Apikores. He was a heretic. And the conventional understanding of Reb Chaim is that he is a heretic with all that it implies. meaning to say, Eino chelak l'olam haba, he's not part of Klal Yisrael, mitzvah l'snoso, moridin v'lo malin, and so on and so forth. And the question is, why would we say that? If b'chol tar kula we apply the principle of onus rachmana patre, we say that someone is not held accountable for actions that they do for which they were coerced, so too, here, it's not his fault. Or at the very least, he should be considered chogeg. Why do we give him the full-fledged status of an apikores? So, the likely reason for Reb Chaim's theory is the following. And again, it's not clear what exactly Reb Chaim said. There are Talmidim of Reb Chaim who didn't understand Reb Chaim this way. For example, Reb Elchanan Wasserman. We'll get to his position a little later. So when I refer to Reb Chaim, it's not like it's not printed in Chidushei Agrach. It's hard to know actually what his position was, though this concept is cited in various sources in his name. So we'll refer to it as Reb Chaim's Mahalich. And the understanding, the basis for the understanding of this view, the philosophical understanding of this view, can be found in Rambam's conception of what Olam Haba is. We'll see shortly, this idea is developed by the Abarbanel in Rosh Hashanah, and he also understands Reb Chaim this way and says this is the basis. This is parenthetically also the academic approach to this question, the academics from Achav into Reb Chaim, it's somewhat dogmatically presumed in many academic sources, though I believe that I will try to argue today that many sources in the Rambam himself really undermine this understanding of the Rambam. There's a lot of evidence against this interpretation of the Rambam from within the Rambam, but this is the presumed understanding. So, yeah. Well, we didn't explain it yet. So let's
I'm just wondering if you're saying that Reb Chaim was implying.
I don't know what Reb Chaim said it. The truth is, ironically, Reb Chaim's approach is the most meduyak in Mishneh Torah. Ironically, it's more nevuchim that's going to be the basis of the frum approach, and Mishneh Torah and Perashah Mishnayis that's going to be the basis of the I don't want to call it non-frum approach. Reb Chaim said it, but the academic approach. So what's the basis for it? So the first thing we have to understand is Rambam's understanding of what Olam Haba is and how someone earns Olam Haba. And this too is a matter of dispute. But some argue that Rambam's understanding of Olam Haba is that Olam Haba is a totally naturalistic existence, a spiritual existence based off of what a person accomplishes intellectually on this world. Or, at the very least, now, nobody would really go that far, because the Rambam says in a dozen places how important Maisim Tovim are for Olam Haba as well, but at the very least, certain intellectual accomplishments are a necessary prerequisite for Olam Haba. Someone who lacks those intellectual accomplishments cannot get Olam Haba. Not because it's a punishment. A punishment would certainly be unfair here, because Rambam would be the first to admit that sometimes false beliefs are in fact not a person's fault. So, not as a punishment, but simply a natural consequence. Olam Haba, by definition, is impossible for someone with a false conception of God. Why would that be? So, if you look at the Rambam in Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Dalet, Halacha Ches, which is not, I'm sorry, I neglected to put it in your source sheets, but I'll read it to you. The Rambam writes, Nefesh kol basar hitzu raso. It is?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, excellent. I thought I forgot to put it in. Okay, Shkayach, page 27. Oh, it's even where it belongs. Nefesh kol basar hitzu raso shenasan lo akel Vehadas hayesera hamitsuya benafsho shel adam hi tsuras adam bedato. So the nefesh of a person is a person's tsura. Sorry, the nefesh of every living being is its tsura, and the das hayesera, the intellectual capacity of a human being, is the nefesh of a person, and therefore it is his tsura. Val tsura zu namar batora nas adam bitzalmenu kidmusenu kilomar shetia lo tsura yodas umasega sayos she'en lahem golam kimo amalachim shem tsura below golam ad sheyidma lahem. So what is the nefesh adam, which again is the tsura of the adam? What is that? That's man's ability to be able to understand and relate to things that exist but do not have a physical body. For example, angels, and more importantly, God. There are certain things that exist, they truly do exist, but they have no physical component whatsoever. So an example of that is a malach. According to the Rambam, malachim are entirely spiritual. They don't have any physical component. Rambam even thinks that they cannot take on a physical component. That's one of the reasons why he thinks that the places in the Torah that depict angels as appearing as humans must be dreams. So an angel is something that has no physical component. And the ability to understand that something could exist in the most true sense and yet not have a physical component is something that humans are capable of doing. That is possible because of their intellectual capacity, which is their tsura, which is given to them by their nefesh. So that's what the Rambam says. Let's skip a little bit to the next halacha tes. Ein suras hanefesh hazos michuberes min hayisodos kedei shetipared lahem. So this nefesh that a person has is not connected to the elements. It's non-physical. Ve'enam, meaning to say that our physical bodies are comprised of the four elements, and therefore when a person dies, he's buried, his body decomposes, those elements come apart. But that is not the case when it comes to the nefesh, because the nefesh isn't physical. Ve'ena mikoach ha-neshama, ad she'teit sricha le-neshama. The nefesh is not dependent upon the neshama, such that it needs the neshama. Now here it's important to recognize, the Rambam uses the term neshama and nefesh differently than other thinkers might use the terms. The neshama is connected to the physical body, so that when the physical body dies, the neshama also dies, whereas the nefesh is entirely a spiritual component. What the Rambam refers to as nefesh is what other sources frequently refer to as neshama. Kimosha neshama tzricha l'guf. In other words, unlike the neshama, which depends on the body, the nefesh does not depend on the body. Ela me'es Hashem, rather the nefesh is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu min HaShemayim hi. Lefikach, כשיפרד הגולם שהוא מחובר מן היסודות וטובת הנשמה מפני שאינה מצויה אלא עם הגוף. So when a person dies and their body decomposes and returns to the elements, and their neshama also ceases to exist because the neshama is tied to the body, וצריכה לגוף בכל מעשיה, לא תיקרא סצורה זאת. This tzura, this nefesh, does not cease to exist. Lefi she'ena tzricha l'neshama b'maaseh, because it's not dependent upon the neshama. Ella, so how does it exist? Ella yodas umaseges hadeos haprudos min haglamin. The nefesh exists because it's capable of understanding existent things that are non-physical. Remember we said before that the nefesh is capable of understanding non-physical things, and it's that capacity that allows it to continue to exist even after being separated from the body, because it's not dependent upon physicality. V'yodas habore hakol, and therefore the nefesh continues to exist and to know God. In fact, the Rambam writes that the ability of a person to understand God after their nefesh is separated from the guf is far greater than its capacity to understand God as long as it's attached to the guf. So the nefesh continues to understand God, ve'omedes li'olam u'yomei olamim, and continues to exist forever. So, one way to understand this Rambam is to read it as follows. In order for the nefesh to continue to exist after a person dies, meaning to say, in order for a person to have a chelek in olam haba, that nefesh has to be able to understand non-physical things and have a correct conception of God, meaning to say, among other things, a conception of God in which God does not have a physical body. And with that, it's able to be omeid liolmei olamim, and being yodei as borel, which is olam haba. And without that, so then olam haba is by definition impossible. That person has not actualized their tsura, because in their lifetime they weren't capable, or maybe they were capable of, but they failed to understand things that are non-physical. And if this is the case, so this would explain why other places the Rambam focuses on intellectual achievements in describing Olam Haba. Here's one example, though there are others. This is in this I did neglect to put in your sheets. It's in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Ches, Halacha Beis. Great. Who would have guessed? I was very tired when I put this together, but apparently less tired than I thought. Okay, good. Page 28. So the Rambam here is describing the Medrash that refers to Olam Haba as Tzadikim Yoshen Vatrosein Birosheim Venenem Ziv Hashchina. So the Rambam goes through each and every piece of that metaphor, and he describes what it is. So here the Rambam says, what exactly is Atroseim Birosheim? What are these crowns that it's referring to? Why is it referred to a crown on the head? Kilomar, Das Shiyadu Shebiglala Zachu L'chayelam Haba. The metaphor of the crown on the head is a metaphor. There's no physical body, but it's a metaphor for the das that they understood by which they were zoche l'chayelam Haba. And this das is mitsuya imahem, remains with them in olam haba, v'hi ha'atara shelahem, and this is their crown. Meaning to say that if a person does not have any das, so then olam haba, again, this might be what it said. I'm going to argue later that all of this is an incorrect reading of the Rambam, but I'm going to try to present each position as effectively as possible. So what this position is basically saying is that olam haba, again, is by definition impossible for someone that does not have a correct conception of God. The olam haba is the conception of God that you achieved on this world that lasts with you and remains with you eternally. It's the deya shiyadu, meaning on this world, shebiglala zachu l'chayim haba, and this deya is mitsuya imayim, it remains with them even after they're dead. So according to this approach, again, why is it that the Nebuchadnezzar, the person who believes God as a physical body because of the Agados HaMishabshos HaSadeos, why is it that they have no chelek li'olam haba? It's because, not that they're punished, but because it's by definition impossible. And it's Rambam's understanding of olam haba that leads him to the conclusion that Nebuchadnezzar does not have a chelek in olam haba. Are there any people that make this point explicitly? So one source is, as I mentioned, the Abarbanel and Rosh Hamanah Perek Yud Beis back on the previous page. I'll read the last couple lines. Lefi shehadas hakozev shiyu beikar mikari emuna kvar yasir hanefesh me'atzlachaso ha'amitis These false beliefs prevent the soul from succeeding. Velo yevi'ehu l'chayi olam haba. Af al pi shelo yaseh osa b'kavana limrod. Even though he came to these beliefs not with the intention to rebel, ki kimo shehasam amaves k'shiyochal adam oso yichale rucho v'nishmaso elav yasof. Af al pi she nemar she'achal oso b'chashvo shehaya machal bari v'nos. Somebody goes ahead, they think they're eating a healthy food, a delicious mushroom, and it turns out it's a poisonous mushroom, and they die. So, their death is not because they intended to kill themselves. They were trying to eat a healthy salad. But, it's a natural consequence. Poison kills. Likewise, the lack of olam haba is a natural consequence of their false beliefs. Yigrishu nefesh adam v'yimna'uhu may Yerushas Olam Haba below Safek. And that's this view of the Rambam. Yes?
So according to this approach, is this still mitzvah to hate them, or is it just that they just lose a lot of that?
So that is an excellent question. One of the problems, I believe, with this approach is that it might explain why they don't have Olam Haba, but why do we hate them? Why is it mitzvah l'snoso? If you understand that what the Rambam writes at the end of the Yud Gimel Ikar Emunah, the first text that we read, is based off of Nebuchadnezzar. So that might explain why they have no chelik and olam haba. Nebuch, okay? We feel bad for them. It's not their fault. It's just, by definition, impossible. But why mitzvah l'snoso? Why treat them so harshly? Why morid in vein malin? If the Rambam in that passage is talking about a Nebuchadnezzar, so that might explain why he has no chelek lom haba, though even that is something that I think intuitively all of us find very problematic. It does seem to be highly unfair, but okay, you know, the Rambam, who's a philosopher, you know, we can't blame him for his crazy philosophical beliefs. But why mitzvah is no so? Right? You're right. It's a good question. And not only that, as we'll elaborate upon later, another major problem for this position is Rambam actually has the principle of Tinok Shenishba. The principle of Tinok Shenishba, which is developed in a number of places, especially Hochos Mamrim, states that if a person is a kofar, and remember, someone who is the Rambam applies this principle to second, third generation Karaites. Karaites are deniers of some of the Yud Gimel Ikar Emunah. Right? So they're a heretic. They're the people, they deny some of the Ikar Emunah. Yet the Rambam says quite the opposite. It's not mitzvah l'snoso, it's mitzvah l'karvo. So clearly, the Rambam could not be talking about this. Clearly the Rambam in Perish HaMishnayos is not talking about the Nebuchadnezzar. Because if it's Nebuchadnezzar, we know the Rambam writes it's not mitzvah l'snoso. Because the Rambam, when he describes the Tinok Shenishba, says that it's a mitzvah l'karvo, and to love him. So that is indeed a problem with this first approach. It seems to contradict Rambam's extension of the principle of Tinok Shenishba to Yud Gimel Ikar Emunah.
What was the makom for the last part about the natural consequence?
I was reading from the Abarbanel. Yes?
So, how would this approach understand the concept of Shahas?
Good. There are many sources in Chazal that also seem to contradict this. One source is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that babies have a chelak in Olam Haba, for example. Now, that's by definition impossible, according to the Rambam. Babies, the Gemara discusses when exactly a baby has a chelek in Olam Haba, but they do, well before they have a correct conception of God. Yesh kon olamo b'sha'achas, actually, I don't think would be problematic, though, because one could claim that you could come to a correct conception of God, b'sha'achas. Now, again, even in this approach, we're not claiming that this is the only factor with respect to Olam Haba. Again, many places the Rambam writes about the importance of Maisim Tovim. One famous example is in his explanation in the Perish Mishnayos of what does it mean, Ratza Kadosh Baruch Hu Lizakos Es Yisrael Lefika Chirba Lem Torah Mitzvos, where the Rambam says the reason why we have so many Torah, so many mitzvos, why is it a zchus to have so many mitzvos? Maybe it would be better to have 5 or 6 mitzvos. We do them perfectly. And the answer, he says, is because by having so many mitzvos, inevitably, a person will do at least one perfectly, one entirely lishma. Different people have different strengths. They're attracted to different mitzvos. But at least one they'll do perfectly in their lifetime. And if you do one mitzvah perfectly, then you're zochel l'chayolam haba. 1 second. What about this? So according to this approach, you'd have to say that, of course, ma'isim tovim are very important with respect to olam haba. And in dozens of places, especially in Hilchos Teshuvah, when he talks about olam haba, he mentions ma'isim tovim. It's not that nobody would... I don't know, nobody. Some people do say that. But I don't think... the strong proponents of this approach would say that intellectual achievements are the only factor in Olam Haba. However, this approach would say that at the very least it is a prerequisite. At the very least it's a prerequisite. And therefore, theoretically, you could say, Yesh kon olamo b'sha'achas, if a person has a correct conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then they're nichnas l'olam haba by definition, and that could be achieved b'sha'achas. Okay. Now again, the Rambam doesn't say that you need to be a philosopher to get into olam haba. That I think is certain. And a correct understanding of olam haba does not demand that a person study Maisa Bereshis and Maisa Merkav and be a philosopher. In fact, the Rambam, in Chelek Aleph, Perek Lamed Hei, of Hilchos, of Mor Nevuchim, writes that it's important to teach even children a proper conception of God, because, like we've said, eternality demands a correct understanding of God. So you don't have to be able to prove God's existence, you don't have to be able to prove God's incorporeality, but you have to know that God exists and is incorporeal. So, again, you don't have to be a philosopher. That might be why the Rambam leaves out certain important philosophical doctrines, like God's not having positive attributes from Mishneh Torah. Something like that. You don't have to be a Rambam to get into Olam Haba, but at the same time, at least a basic and correct understanding of God, like that which is described in a couple of lines in Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, is a prerequisite. And then to summarize some of the questions on the Rambam on this first approach, we'll get to a number of questions, but the first question we mentioned is statements in Chazal that children have a chelek in Olam Haba. It seems to be unfair, Yashrus. Again, I don't know if that's a pircha, but it's certainly something that tugs at the heart. Rambam's own treatment of Tinok Shenishba, meaning to say, Rambam's chiddush of Tinok Shenishba is that a Tinok Shenishba, even someone who does not believe in some of the Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah, is not mitzvah lisno, so it's mitzvah lakarvo, and therefore the statement that's the basis of Reb Chaim's view, namely that passage at the end of Yud Gimel Ikar Emunah, cannot possibly be the basis for this view, because that statement, at the very least, is clearly referring to people who are not ones, people that should have known better, right? So we can no longer, maybe Hilchos Teshuvah could be the basis, we'll talk about that, but certainly the passage what we began with in from the Perish Mishnayos, where he says anyone who doesn't believe in these 13 principles has no chelek in Olam Haba, that can't possibly be the basis for the Rambam's, for Reb Chaim's approach, because that's clearly talking about someone who, again, is not ones in terms of their beliefs, because the Rambam explicitly says that lisnoso doesn't apply if you're ones, at least with respect to belief in the Mesorah and the Torah Shabbat. And therefore, another problem for this approach is, well, where are you getting it from? If you're not getting it from that paragraph, well, where are you getting it from? So this brings us, and we'll add some further questions to this approach a little later, but let's turn to the second approach, in the Rambam. The second approach, and this would resolve the Tinok Shenishba problem, is to suggest the following distinction. Maybe we will divide between the Ikari Amuna. Reb Chaim and the Abarbanel were right with respect to the first five Ikari Amuna, which relate to a correct conception of God. When it comes to a false conception of God, as we stated earlier, Olam Haba is, by definition, impossible. Not as a punishment, but definitionally. However, when it comes to other Yesodei Amuna, the final eight, so then we will say Nebuch an Apikores is not an Apikores. About that, we'll apply principles like Tinok Shenishba. So what the Rambam writes concerning the Karaites, for example, that the first generation Karaites are certainly heretics, but the second generation Karaites are not blamed for their mistakes. The reason why they don't believe in the Torah Shebaal Peh is because they were educated falsely. So about them, we will say no, they don't have the status of an apikores because they are not responsible for their false beliefs. It's not their fault. They were simply miseducated. And therefore, perhaps they're certainly part of Klal Yisrael, and perhaps they even have a chelek in Olam Haba. So basically, this is a quasi-acceptance of Reb Chaim / Abarbanel. Nebuch an Apikores is achet an Apikores klape the first five Ikari Amuna, which are about God, a correct conception of God, but the final eight Ikari Amuna, which don't relate to God, they relate to beliefs. So then, it's not true. For example, there's no reason to say that someone who doesn't believe in the coming of Mashiach is by definition excluded from Olam Haba. And this would, by the way, answer a question that a number of Rishonim ask on the Rambam. The Radvaz, as well as the Sefer Ikrim, note that Rabbeinu Hillel number 2, the Amora, not the Tana, known as Hillel Nasiya, right, the fifth generation Amora, who was the Nasi between the years 320 and 385. So Hillel Nasiya seemed to claim that there would be no Mashiach. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, 99a. Now, it doesn't mean to say that there's not going to be a Messianic era. He couldn't deny that. That's actually this week's Parsha, right? We're going to read this week, Parshas Nitzavim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ingather you from the exiles, Veitivcha Me'arbosecha, everything is going to be great. So he didn't deny that, but he thought that the nevuos that were stated concerning the person of Mashiach, the personal Mashiach, were already fulfilled earlier, and they wouldn't exist. Now, we certainly reject Hillel Nasiya's view, and we accept the view of nearly everybody else that there will be a Mashiach, and that's why belief in Mashiach is indeed one of the Yud Gimel Ikari Amuna. But the question that the Radvaz asks on the Rambam is, how could you call an Amora an Apikores? How could you say that? So must be that not believing in the Mashiach doesn't automatically render a person a heretic. That's the question that they ask. And we'll return to this question a little later when we consider the possibilities of an evolving definition of Apikores based off of what's accepted. Again, that's something that wouldn't make sense at all within the first conception, because if you think everything is naturalistic, it doesn't make sense that that would evolve. But this view would say no. Again, when it comes to the final eight Ikari Amuna, so someone with false beliefs is not automatically an Apikores, so that's why Karaites are, it's not a mitzvah lesnoso, and that's why Hillel Nasiya, who in fact denied one of the Ikari Amuna, would in fact not be considered an Apikores. However, concerning the first five Ikari Amuna, so then Reb Chaim was correct, that a false conception of God, by definition, precludes the possibility of being a Ben Olam Haba. However, this theory is also not without problems. First of all, the source of Tinok Shenishba, remember, what does Tinok Shenishba mean? It's not talking about a Karite. The Rambam applies the principle to Karite, but it's talking about someone who is taken captive as a baby and brought up among Christians or idolaters or the like. That's where the Gemara actually uses this term. Now, presumably, someone who's actually a Tinok Shenishba has a false conception of God. So to say that the principle of Tinok Shenishba doesn't apply to someone with a false conception of God is problematic. No, it's not impossible. You could say, no, the Rambam would say that there's two types of Tinok Shenishba. One, with respect to the dinim of Holchos Shabbos and bringing a chatos, whether you have to bring one chatos or multiple chatos, and then there's another type of Tinok Shenishba, that's the case of the second generation Karaite and the like, v'chule, v'chule. You could make such chilukim, but it's a little forced, it's a little difficult. I will say, though, that it might be possible to say, I don't want to read it together with you today, but it's in your Makor sheet. If you look at the Rambam's development of Tinok Shenishba in the Perasha Mishnayos in the first parak of Chulin, perhaps there is the basis for such a distinction. Another problem with this understanding of the Rambam is the palace analogy from Mor Nevuchim, Chela Gimel, Perek Nun Aleph. The palace analogy puts the second category of people, which are basically people with a false conception of God, presumably a corporeal understanding of God, Rambam seems to classify them as Tinok Shenishba. Maybe we'll have a chance to go through this more carefully. But there the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim seems to describe what he refers to elsewhere as Tinok Shenishba, and he includes within that category someone who has a false conception of God, namely someone with a corporeal understanding of God. Another problem with this theory is that the Rambam, both in his Hakdama to Perek HaChelek and in Hilchos Tshuva, does not make any such distinction. He puts them together always. He doesn't say, well, there's two categories of Ikar Yamuna. There's the first five and the subsequent eight. And if this theory was correct, you would expect the Rambam to allude to it in a more explicit way. So the first approach is problematic because it fails to account for Tinok Shenishba, while the second approach is problematic because it relies on a distinction that's not implied by the simple reading of the Rambam. Finally, approach two also relies on Abarbanel's understanding of Rambam's conception of Olam Haba, which, as we said, is problematic. Meaning to say, again, there's no makor for this second approach either within the Rambam. When you go back to the Rambam, so what did the Rambam write? The Rambam wrote that anyone who denies any of these 13 principles, ein lo chelek lo haban mitzvah lesnoso. So we already said that text cannot possibly be talking about the Tinok Shenishba because it says mitzvah lesnoso. So where is the basis for this position? Once you say that that's talking about someone who denies basically they're blamed for their denial, not like the Tinok Shenishba, so then how do you know this exists? Another problem for approaches one and two is a very fascinating and highly controversial statement of the Rambam in Chelek Aleph Perek Mem Vav. The Rambam over there, after spending dozens of chapters explaining why the various words in the Torah that seem to imply God has a body are not actually implying that God has a body. If you know how to read these words properly, then you'll recognize that they don't support corporeality. But the Rambam then deals with an obvious question, which is, why in the world does the Torah write? Why is the Torah written in such a way that's so misleading? Nobody would deny that a person can be misled by the Torah's depictions of God. So why is it that the Torah would write them in such a way? We actually alluded to this issue last week, and we saw other theories. One theory was to ensure that there's a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Rambam gives a different approach. The Rambam writes, what page do we have for that? Page
30.
Okay, great. On page 29, I didn't read it to you inside, but you'll see the Makoros for Tinok Shenishba and Shas, as well as in the Rambam. That's where you see Tinok Shenishba on page 30. So, the bottom of page 30, and the translation is on page 31. I guess we'll take a look at the translation. The same is the case with the information concerning the Creator given to the ordinary classes of men in all the prophetical books and in the Torah. So, in Tanakh, when you look at Tanakh, it's written in such a way that the masses will come to an understanding, a false understanding of God, namely an understanding that God is a physical body. Why is this? For it was found necessary to teach all of them that God exists, and that he is in every respect the most perfect being. That is to say, he exists not only in the sense in which the earth and the heavens exist, but he exists and possesses life, wisdom, power, activity, and all the other properties which our belief in his existence must include, as will be shown below. The minds of the multitude were accordingly guided to the belief that he exists by imagining that he is corporeal, and to the belief that he is living by imagining that he is capable of motion, because ordinary men consider only the body as fully, truly, and undoubtedly existing when it is connected with a body, but is itself not a body. Meaning to say as follows, most people are unable to grasp, at least at first, that something could exist and be entirely non-physical. The audience to which Tanakh was addressed, the people living at that time, were incapable of coming to that belief, at least most people, at least initially. For us, for various reasons, it's actually relatively easy to imagine that God could exist but still have no physical properties whatsoever. However, at that time, that was something that was nearly impossible for most people, he says. And therefore, in order to convince the masses that God in fact exists, it was necessary to describe him in physical ways. Meaning to say, that the Torah should be read in a certain sense as a double entendre. The true and correct meaning of the Torah is that, of course, God does not have a physical body, and the correct interpretation of the psukim that imply that he does have a physical body is that he doesn't. The correct interpretation of these psukim is the interpretation that the Rambam offers in the 40 chapters at the beginning of Moreh Nevuchim, when he goes through the Torah word by word and shows that the words that imply he has a body do not actually imply he has a body. That is the correct understanding of God. However, it was written in such a way so that it could be misunderstood, because that misunderstanding is valuable insofar as that it will bring the masses to belief in God. That is the Rambam's answer. Now, if you accept the first approach, the Reb Chaim Abar Benel approach, this is problematic. Because if you assume that someone believes in God, but believes that God has a body, is not a true believer in God, so what have you accomplished? Meaning to say, why is it that according to the first approach, the person with a false conception of God, with, let's say, a corporeal understanding of God, is excluded by definition from Olam Haba? Why is that? Because they don't actually believe in God. The Rambam writes, we'll see it a little later, that such a person is a heretic, is an atheist. He's an accidental atheist. What do I mean, an accidental atheist? While it's true he believes in God, the God that he believes in is not the true God. So he believes in the figment of his own imagination. In that sense, the Rambam writes, he's no different from the idolater. The idolater who serves the statue is serving a figment of his imagination. Well, if you serve a corporeal God, the Rambam writes, you're also serving a figment of your imagination, because there's no connection between the God that you're serving and the God that exists. The Rambam uses a remarkable analogy for it, the text of which is inside a little later in the book, but I'll say it outside because it's late. It shows that even the Rambam, despite all his criticism against imagination, had a great imagination. He says, imagine the following. Let's say you don't know what an elephant is. So you ask me, what's an elephant? I say, oh, an elephant. Let me tell you about an elephant. It's a translucent being with three heads that flies up and down and floats and has clear skin. I don't remember the other funny things that he describes, right? So, okay. So he said, oh, great. Now I know what an elephant is. It's a three-headed flying creature. So do you know what an elephant is? No. In other words, there's no connection between what an elephant actually is and what you think an elephant is. They're unrelated. The same thing is true when it comes to someone who believes in a corporeal understanding of God. There is no connection between the true God and that which they imagine to be God. And accordingly, when they daven, they're not davening to God. When they believe, they're not believing in God. They're an accidental atheist. But they're an atheist. They don't believe in God. If you're an atheist, that's what this approach assumes. Now, if that's true, so what advantage is there in convincing generations of people that God exists but is corporeal? You see, if you reject approach number one, if you say no, that even the Rambam disagrees with Nebuchadnezzar. We'll have to depict this, expand on this view, what I think is the correct understanding of the Rambam, a little later, and we're probably not going to get to it this week. But if, for the time being, you reject the idea of Nebuchadnezzar, you actually believe that even the Rambam would apply the principle of Tinok Shenishba to corporeal understanding of God, so then you could understand why there's a very strong value in teaching people that God is corporeal, because belief in a corporeal God is surely better than no belief in God. But if you take the first approach is saying, no, belief in a corporeal God is identical to no belief in God. Either way, it's atheism. Either way, it's idolatry. It's a false conception of God. If you take that approach, so then when the Rambam writes that the Torah speaks in a way that could be understood as referring to a corporeal God, because it's valuable for people to believe in God, even if it's a false conception of God, if that's the approach you take, then Rambam's statement over here in 146 is highly problematic. Now again, I don't think it's a pircha, because you could say no. You could say it's just a stepping stone. Meaning to say that the Torah speaks in a way that is understood, that seems to be understood by the masses as referring to a corporeal understanding of God. That will bring them to a correct understanding of God eventually. Hopefully, if they first believe in God, even if it's corporeal, they could eventually believe in a non-corporeal God, in the true, and have a true conception of God. So it is possible to say that, so it's not a pircha, but at the same time it's difficult, right? Imagine what the Rambam's saying. The Rambam's saying that most of the people, the masses, not just in the generation that received the Torah, but the Rambam says throughout the period of the prophets, were incapable of believing in a non-corporeal understanding of God. So what the Rambam is saying is that most of the people throughout the period of Tanakh were not Jews. You're chayev to kill them. They're hamoridim akofrim chusin min agayim. Chova lesnoso. Misasu b'chal adam. Moridim v'lo malin. Do we want to say that for all the people throughout, not all, chas v'shalom, not all, but most, the masses, the multitudes? That's what we're saying if you take the first approach. That seems highly inconceivable. Read Tanakh, right? The people in the Nevi'im, they weren't always the best people in the world, but they also weren't this. Now again, I would assume that if you take the first approach, you would say no. The Rambam doesn't mean to say that the masses always believe this. In order to bring the masses to a belief in God, this was a first step necessary, and then they would subsequently, but hopefully immediately, move on to a correct understanding. And this was necessary throughout the period of Nevi'im, meaning to say, in each and every generation, that's how belief in God was taught. So, it's not a pircha, but at the same time, I think the it doesn't sound so much like that. Yes? That's what Rambam would be saying according to the first approach, yes. Because there's no alternative. There's no alternative. Educationally speaking, if someone can't be directly convinced of something immediately, so you teach them something false first. And then, once they understand something false, so they could come to an understanding of the truth. But, I mean, I happen to think that your point is a good point, which is one of the reasons why I find the first two approaches problematic. Yeah.
According to that logic, wouldn't we all today, not just in terms of corporeality, but any sort of misconception of God, be apikorsen then? As long as if we don't have the 100% correct way of seeing God.
So, it would seem that way. Hopefully, we all do have a correct understanding of God, but
we're all limited.
But we'll talk a little bit later. That's what this is a distinction. The question you're raising is a very good question. And I guess, Be'ezras Hashem, the next year we'll return to that, which is, even if you do take this approach, we will not necessarily apply this approach to all misunderstandings of God. Or that's a question that we have to ask. I'll just give you an example where you might see room for distinction. The Rambam, at great length, for 10 chapters, writes about how it's incorrect and it's false to believe that God has positive characteristics. Now, does that mean that anyone with a false, who believes in God's having positive characteristics, is an accidental atheist because their conception of God is false? So I think that there's reason to distinguish between those two cases, and that's why perhaps the Rambam, in his halachic works, in the Perush HaMishnayos and in the Mishneh Torah, does not refer to God's not having positive traits, because such a false conception of God does not necessarily deem a person an accidental heretic. So it could be that according to this first approach, we'll distinguish between certain types of misunderstandings. Now, what the basis for that is, we'll have to explain. And the truth is that there are a number of passages in Emor Nevuchim that sound very much against what I just said. So that's a question that we'll have to turn to, which is, what types of mistakes do we see as mistakes, but not mistakes that undermine belief in a fundamental sense? And what type of mistakes do we see as undermining belief entirely? Right? To go back to an elephant analogy, if you think that an elephant has a big fluffy tail, but everything else is correct. So we probably wouldn't say that you know what an elephant is, you just have a mistaken understanding of an elephant, right? Whereas when you think an elephant has three heads and flies and is translucent, so then you don't actually have an understanding of an elephant. So now, where exactly you draw the line, it's actually a question that philosophers like to talk about, but where you draw the line, when is it that you know what an elephant is, you just have a mistaken understanding of an elephant, and your belief in an elephant is so false that it's actually not an elephant whatsoever? Where to draw that line, especially when it comes to belief in God, is a very good question, and that's a question what we will return to, Be'ezras Hashem. So now we're up to the third approach, and we're also out of time. So, Be'ezras Hashem, we will pick up next time. Now, when is next time? Do we have class October 25th? 24th. All right.
We don't have the week of Shabbat Shiva.
If that's what whatever it says in the calendar. So that's what you should do. I'm not sure, but I think that's probably correct. So we don't have to alter sukkah. So the good part is, this gives you a lot of time to chazer and stew over these very heavy matters. And I want to wish you all a ksivach simatova, good gebencht yar, and we'll pick up next time. Have a good Shabbos as well.
Thank you.
For those staying for the next session, we're going to get 5 minutes.